Monday, July 20th, starting week 16 of the fantasy baseball season. Adam Azer with Al Melchior, and now we get to welcome back Scott White, who took a big old week off last week.
From the podcast, I guess. I was,
yeah, from the podcast.
Felt like I was doing plenty of things in Cincinnati, but, yeah, it was a good trip to the All-Star game and all the festivities surrounding it.
Good morning, Al.
Good morning, Adam. I realized, and I talked to Scott on my way in this morning, and realized I made a major omission in my Cincy recap, but I can let Scott handle. He had a very interesting airport encounter.
Oh, yeah. So it turns out our flight back, both Pedro and Carlos Martinez were flying with us. So they were sitting there in the airport and, you know, getting a fair amount of attention. Probably Pedro more than Carlos, just because he's more recognizable at this stage.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I went over and talked with him, too. And, you know, just how knowledgeable he was impressive to me, because we were kind of when we saw him before I'd gone over and talked to him, we were kind of talking about, you know, who did the Expos trade to get him back before he was anybody with the Dodgers? And, you know, we brought up the name Delino DeShields, but we weren't sure if that was like the complete trade. So I ask him, hey, we were talking over there. Do you remember who it was that the Expos traded to get you? And without missing a beat, he goes, Delino DeShields, senior.
That's it? That's the only guy in the trade?
Yeah. Actually, it is. Did you confirm it?
Cause, yeah, because while Scott was checking with Pedro Martinez, I was checking Baseball Reference.
Yeah.
I like Scott's method better, though.
He was like, and I was devastated. The Dodgers were my organization, but they didn't have a lot of faith in me. They didn't want to use me as a starting pitcher.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
How about that? He told you all that. That's cool. How fun. He seems like a pretty cool guy to talk to.
He was. I kind of had to make an excuse to walk away because he kept wanting to talk.
Wow. Really? Pedro Martinez. Pedro Martinez is going to go on TBS and be like, I ran into Scott White of CBS Sports in the airport. Yeah, so he went from probably one of my most hated athletes, just, you know, because of the rivalry, to a guy that I love listening to now. He's pretty cool. First pitch is 5:05 p.m. Eastern time. Get your lineup set. We got a doubleheader, the Angels and the Red Sox in Los Angeles of Anaheim. They get started at 5:05. So much to talk about from the weekend. Unbelievable pitching performances from some aces. Plus, a lot of starting pitchers that I think you might want to pick up right now. Obviously, we'll talk about hitters too, go over the most added list. We're going to have a little bit of fun at the top of the show with some emails. So just to avoid teasing things too long, give me one or two guys that you think are close to or definitely are must-adds right now.
For me, the closest would be Tony Cingrani.
Yeah, that's kind of where I was going with that.
Okay, glad to help out. No, I mean, it's funny because it's been a quiet weekend on waivers and in pretty much all my leagues. And I'm not sure how much of that has to do with the break or just, you know, people running out of fab dollars or whatever. But, you know, that was definitely the guy that seemed to be the most pursued. And I think for good reason.
Yeah, Scott, I saw you picked him up in one Roto League. I put in a claim. You got him. I added
him.
Was
it Roto League or was it head to head? Because I feel like I've only been interested in adding him in head to head for the relief pitcher eligibility. I'm not super confident in him at this stage of his career. I would probably be adding Aaron Nola over him in a Roto League.
There you go.
Yeah. And just looking at the most added list here, Kyle Schwarber is still 24% unowned. So that's. I guess maybe not in one catcher leagues is he a must add, but certainly in two catcher leagues.
He is, yeah, 76% owned. Taylor Youngman. I don't know. I don't know what to make of Taylor Youngman, guys. What do you think?
I mean, I think he's pretty good. What is his ownership rate?
He's now 63% owned.
Okay. I think that's pretty fair. You know, could maybe stand to be slightly higher, but, you know, just because he's, With that percentage, probably still largely unowned in standard mixed leagues and shallower. And I think he's got some use in those formats.
And one other pitcher, same team, Mike Fiers. Maybe that was the guy that, yeah, okay. I think that was the guy that Scott claimed that I wanted.
Okay. Mike yeah, that Fires. Wasn't a Roto League. And I was surprised he was dropped. Last five starts for Fires, 2.18 ERA, and only 18 hits in 33 innings. The strikeout rate's still not what we're counting on coming into the year during that stretch, but 18 hits in 33 innings, I mean, that's not something, even during his moments of greatness earlier this year, he was still giving up some hits.
Yeah, if you want to go back even further with Fires, not quite as good, but last 13 starts, Fires has a 3.14 ERA and 64 strikeouts and 77 in a third innings. Who would you guys rather have, Fires or Youngman? Actually, let's talk Fires, Nola, Youngman, Cingrani. How would you rank Fires, Nola, Youngman, and Cingrani?
You ranked them for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I still don't know what to make of Mike Fires, because the thing, Scott, that you pointed out, that the strikeouts aren't really there in the way that we'd hoped or expected, to me is the most critical thing. And he's been, you know, we had debates before the season about his consistency.
Yeah.
And I felt like I was sort of the apologist. And I think, you know, certainly now I've come around. I don't know if you still have the same view, but I've come around to the view that I'm not sure I can trust the consistency.
Oh, no, I can't either. I do think he's, particularly coming off a stretch like this, I mean, you have to have him on your roster just in case he does take off here.
Yeah, where I have him on my roster, I wasn't even sure about starting, to be honest. But, all right, so I'll answer the question. So, Cingrani I put first. Fires, Youngman, and I'm sorry, who's the fourth?
Nola.
I actually would put him fourth in that group.
Okay. What do you guys expect from Nola? He's going to start Tuesday for the Philadelphia Phillies, make his major league debut.
I'd be way more excited if either he pitched for another team or was facing the Marlins.
Well, eventually he'll face the Marlins and the Mets.
Yes. So that'll be good. Now, he's another one I'm not sure what to make of. The one thing I could be pretty confident is that he'll throw a lot of strikes, which is a good thing to see. But the strikeouts really hadn't appeared until his brief time in AAA.
Yeah, I kind of feel like he might be a little short of ace upside for as high end of a prospect as he is and as early as he was drafted and all of that, because the strikeouts hadn't really been there in the minors. And there have been pitchers who've ended up being better strikeout pitchers in the majors than the minors, so I'm not putting it past him. But right now I see him as kind of a guy who's going to be reliable enough to roster, maybe not start him every week, but good back-end rotation guy in mixed leagues. That's kind of what I'm expecting.
Nola is 56% owned. I got more names for you a little bit later, but first an email, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Email of the day number one is from Jim in Minnesota. He says, hey, Yost, Flanders, and Ruge.
Sounds like Neds, but I'm not sure about who's Ruge.
Ruge Ned Odor, I think.
Ruge Ned.
Yeah. Was clever. Where would you guys rank Carlos Correa among shortstops in redraft leagues next year? If Tulowitzki is still number one, where do they both fall in the overall rankings? Has Correa already become a second/third round pick? P.S. If Die Hard is a Christmas movie, then Saving Private Ryan is a foreign film, being set in France and filmed on location in Ireland and England. Yeah, thank you, Jim. That just shows that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie. I appreciate
the
support.
I disagree with the sentiment that Die Hard is a Christmas movie. So I agree with Jim there.
Yes, me too.
But I'm not sure I buy the analogy.
You know what? It doesn't matter. As long as you're saying that Die Hard is not a Christmas movie, I'm on board. Where is Carlos Correa next year in the shortstop rankings?
I, as of right now, would put him second behind Tulo. And in terms of where he actually goes in the draft, I don't know. Third round still feels maybe a little bit early for Correa.
Well, I don't know. If the season ended today, without sitting here and ranking the players, I'd kind of think early third round. Yeah, but
Tulo first still.
No, Tulo probably mid second.
No, I mean, I'm sorry, first shortstop.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. You know, one of the things I talked about, you guys weren't on the show. We talked about lessons learned last week. And this is not a new one or anything, but your two hitters sometimes struggle. That might be something that you keep in mind when you rank Correa next year.
I probably will.
Okay. Email of the day number two is from Tim in the Woods. It recently occurred to me that your analysis is 100% stats and data driven. I love the nerdy slash statistical aspect of baseball, but it seems to me you are completely overlooking the other part of baseball analysis, what you see with your eyes. A high BABIP or fly ball rate is great and all, but what happened to the good old eye test? I didn't snag Justin Turner because his hard hit ball rate was greatly improved. I added him because his swing looked balanced and powerful, and because he looks like Tormund from Game of Thrones.
I don't know who that is.
That is true, by the way.
Yeah?
I had to look up Tormund because I don't know the names, but yeah, it's kind of funny. Don't get me wrong, I love the podcast, but it could use fewer vegetables and more steak. P.S. Adam, more riddles. The fork in the road was awesome. P.S.S. I think it's actually P.P.S. The best sports movie of all time, obviously, is The Sandlot 2. I'm also partial to the R-rated version of the first film, The Sandlot, The Beast Kills. Didn't know that existed. P.P.P.S. I don't even know where we are now. Remember Joe McEwing?
Super Joe.
We don't know why he mentioned that.
He's still in baseball, right? Third base coach for the White Sox, I want to say.
Oh, wow. You really do remember Joe McEwing. That was impressive, Scott. I don't know if that's true, but impressive nonetheless. All right. I'm going to have to say, as the guy who speaks out against statistical analysis sometimes, I would have to disagree that we're 100% statistics based here. But,
I kind of take exception to that. I think I have trouble sometimes keeping up with Al and especially Chris in the
nerdery.
The nerdery, yeah. So, I mean, I use it too, but I don't think
And defend us in general and Scott in particular, I think Scott brings the eye test, to the podcast. I mean, I think we all, Chris and me much more, but we all rely on the stats, because you can't always trust the eye test. And I do sometimes the stats bring out things that make me question what I see.
And vice versa. Sometimes you can't trust the stats.
Yeah. And look, here's the problem with the eye test. It's impossible to see everything. So I do my best to watch as much as I can without losing my mind. I think as the least statty of anyone on this podcast, I really do find a lot of value in all the stats that you guys bring up. The only thing I don't really like is WAR, because I think I don't really like the name. I think it's like a pretentious name for a stat. I think the hard hit ball stuff, home run to fly ball rate, ground ball rate, all that stuff, I think it's very, very useful. And it's not the only thing, but it's really just impossible to see everything around baseball, and we have to rely on stats a lot. And it's good stuff. It helps.
More information is always a good thing. What I don't think is a good thing is relying too much on any one thing. And
so if it were 100%, which I don't think it is, that would be bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
I think there are a lot of analysts who, for instance, rely way too much on BABIP specifically. When I've always kind of viewed BABIP as kind of a way of reverse engineering strikeout rates impact on batting average, and there will always be high strikeout hitters who hit for average.
Okay. Thank you for that. Just wanted to get that out of the way. Stats of the day. Let's go right into some stats. Zach Greinke is 43 and two-thirds consecutive scoreless innings. The record in baseball is held by Oral Hershiser in 1988. He had 59 scoreless innings in a row. That's mind-boggling. But how about Zach Greinke? Six straight starts without allowing an earned run, and that's the second time in his career he's done it. Did that in 08 and 09 over the course of two seasons with the Royals. What do you even say about him and Keuchel, the two All-Star Game starters, were just amazing. Greinke struck out 11 Nationals, gave up three hits on Sunday. Your thoughts on him?
Well, for starters, I've never played street hockey with Zach Greinke, but I have played street hockey with Oral Hershiser.
So. Have you really?
Yeah. Well, his family grew up in the same neighborhood as me.
Jeez. So. Conversing with Pedro Martinez, playing street hockey with Oral. What, you guys are celebrities. Well, Chris and Heath were, not that I disagree with them, but talking about Greinke as one of the most, if not the most obvious sell high candidates in fantasy. And, he did this on Sunday.
Well, and I'm sorry, to you know, give some serious analysis. I mean, to give him his due, because I've been kind of battling people on Twitter, you know, because I've still got him ranked around 20th. I mean, his control has been phenomenal of late. And, you know, and getting more close to a strikeout per inning. So, I mean, those are stats that you can't really argue with. But, you know, as I've said probably over and over this season, the thing with Greinke, why I don't have him ranked higher, is because throughout his career, he's been very inconsistent as a strikeout pitcher. So I think as great as he is right now, I could see him being something slightly less than elite from this point forward.
Yeah, but how much less? And how do you...
Well, I did say slightly. I
right,
mean, to
right.
Top 20 isn't bad.
Well, and my point, like, how much do you want to mess with that, really? Like, if I own Greinke, yeah, I'm not expecting him to finish with a 131 ERA, or 130, excuse me. Kind of shortchanged him there. 130 ERA. But I'm not feeling like he's a problem or a problem waiting to happen or something I need to get out ahead of before, you know, everything comes crashing down. I feel like he's my ace and I'm comfortable just slotting him in there every week.
Yeah.
So I just feel like calling him a sell high candidate is, it's risky. I think it's risky. It's as risky as saying, oh, he's definitely going to have a 130 ERA the rest of the way.
Well, if you could trade Greinke for, let's say, Jake Arrieta and Yoenis Cespedes, would you do that?
No, I wouldn't, because I don't think Arrieta's really. I mean, I think I've got Arrieta a few spots higher in my rankings, but he's not significantly.
But you're getting
better.
Cespedes.
Well, you're saying you have Arrieta ahead of Greinke, and then you're getting Cespedes on top of it, but you want to do it?
I suppose. Well, okay. I was really focusing on the pitcher part.
Oh no, the hitter part is the part. Well, I understand you're not going to trade Greinke straight up for a pitcher behind him.
I probably would do that then.
But if you can get another piece and, you know, seemingly downgrade a pitcher, but downgrade to a guy that you expect, like DeGrom for you, Scott. You have DeGrom six spots behind Greinke, but if you could get DeGrom and a good piece, that's how you would sell high on
Greinke,
right?
See, I was
right?
kind of being very laser-headed, because when I was thinking about selling high on Greinke, I was thinking about, okay, you know, would I trade him for Kluber? Would I trade him for Felix? You know, that kind of thing. But yeah, that two-for-one deal, I would definitely do.
Scott, you on board with that?
I think so.
Right.
Okay. I mean, it would have to be another pitcher, though, that I could trust is going to perform at an ace level.
Right. Aroldis Chapman, another stat for you. Became the fastest pitcher to reach 500 strikeouts. He did it in 292 innings, breaking Craig Kimbrell's record of 305 innings to get to 500 Ks. Pretty cool. Another stat for you. The Mets went 1-for-26 with runners in scoring position yesterday, and they won at St. Louis in 18 innings.
I watched pretty much a whole ball game within that game yesterday and didn't see any scoring.
Wow. San Diego was rained out at home for the first time since 2006, and the Angels were rained out at home for the first time since 1995, the same day that Batman Forever was released. And that is the one with Tommy Lee Jones and Nicole Kidman and Jim Carrey and I think Val Kilmer. So how about that?
How about that? Yeah. That was a long time ago.
Statistical analysis for you. Big news. Carlos Martinez ended up throwing four innings yesterday, took the loss against the Mets. Al, do we know what that means for him this week?
I do know, not yet. And we didn't ask him at the airport prior to the
that,
game.
That would have been interesting if he knew that.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine he was going to be a two-star pitcher, though, and now there's no way.
No.
Pedro also said Carlos Martinez was going to be better than him, but I didn't take that to heart. Find that hard to believe.
Starter sit Miguel Sano.
I would sit.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's earned must-start status yet anyway.
If Yasmani Grandal is not in the lineup today, you might want to play it safe with him. He took a foul tip off the mask, and we'll get some tests today. Rehab assignments underway. Anthony Rendon, Ryan Zimmerman, Corey Dickerson. Zimmerman and Dickerson both with plantar fasciitis, and Dickerson could be back pretty soon, so that's exciting. Justin Upton left yesterday's game with a sore oblique. Manager Pat Murphy doesn't expect a DL stint for Upton. Starter sit, Justin Upton.
Probably sit him if I had quality alternatives. Rather not take a chance on an oblique injury.
Yeah, totally. The Cubs activated Rafael Soriano. Jason Mott really seems to be the closer.
Yeah, he does.
So you're not thinking Soriano factors in?
I think anything's possible in that bullpen.
Yeah, but I might pick Soriano up in an NL-only league.
Steven Sousa could be back Tuesday. Aaron Sanchez is coming back, but he's going to pitch out of the bullpen. Same with Chris Medlin in Kansas City. Chris Carter has an injured ankle. He could miss a few more games. Willie Peralta could be back soon for Milwaukee. What does that do to the Milwaukee rotation?
That is a really good question because it's hard to see them giving Taylor Youngman a seat. Of course, I said the same thing about Trevor May in Minnesota. So when Irvin Santana came back.
Yeah, but they have a Loesch guy who's just been awful.
Yeah,
Garza's been awful too.
Yeah,
and
maybe somebody develops some suckitis and goes to the DL.
Yes,
maybe they dump one in a trade.
Yeah, could be. Would it give you pause to pick up Taylor Youngman? Oh, Jimmy Nelson, I suppose could go to the bullpen or minors. I don't know. Would it give you any pause to pick up Taylor Youngman? The fact that Peralta is on the horizon.
I don't think so. Only because whoever I'm giving up to get Taylor Youngman probably isn't going to be that much of a risk to lose anyway.
Okay. So we got a doubleheader today with the Angels and the Red Sox. Eduardo Rodriguez and Hector Santiago were scheduled to start yesterday. They will start today instead.
You know, when you were asking about picking up Soriano, I've noticed too a popular guy this weekend to pick up was J.J. Hoover. I thought that was pretty savvy for the people who did that because I think it's just a matter of time before he is the Reds' closer.
You expect Chapman to be moved?
That is what I'm saying.
I'm not
saying that Chapman's going to be a setup guy.
Yeah, where do you think Chapman goes? And who could he bump out of a closer's role?
Maybe Toronto?
Toronto certainly needs a closer. That's the most obvious one, I guess.
Is there a chance maybe the Tigers could look
to replace Soria in that role?
Is there a chance that Drew Storen is going to lose his role in Washington?
Well, I wouldn't think so, but just a couple years ago, he lost it for Rafael Soriano for no good reason. So if the Nationals see that as a way to upgrade, I suppose it's possible.
All right, FanDuel could be a lot of fun tonight because you have terrible pitchers on the mound, which means you can spend big on maybe a Matt Harvey or I like Gio Gonzalez today. I'll explain why. Scott's going to be like, you schmuck, you should start Matt Harvey.
I've never heard Scott call him a schmuck.
I got to tell you, Matt Harvey's not my number one today.
Andrew Heaney?
Yeah, Andrew Heaney is.
Yeah, it's not a bad one.
$7,000 Heaney.
I like Gio Gonzalez against the team that played 18 innings yesterday. I think that's kind of a sneaky little advantage. But anyway, more on that. Plus, they're the Mets, you know. But more on that later. FanDuel changing the way that people play fantasy sports. And changing the way that podcasters are talking about fantasy sports. Couple things for you to keep in mind. One, if you go there now and you haven't done it already, sign up for FanDuel and use our offer code CBSPOD. Click the microphone in the upper right-hand corner, use CBSPOD, sign up, and for every dollar you deposit, FanDuel will match it with up to $200 that gets earned as you play. CBSPOD. You need to remember that as well because go to FanDuel.com/CBSPOD and compete in a daily tournament Monday through Friday with us. We have a giveaway, by the way, later on in the show. I'll get to that in just a second. Compete in a tournament with us, FanDuel.com/CBSPOD. It only costs $2 to enter. Get back to that in just a second. But I want to talk about more rotation help for fantasy baseballers. We talked about Nola, Cingrani, three other guys that could be back soon. Jaime Garcia is owned in 73% of leagues. Vince Velasquez is 34% owned. Kevin Gausman is 29% owned. Velasquez and Gausman will both start this week. Kyle Hendricks, 68% owned. He's been awesome. 0.35 ERA in his last four starts. Irvin Santana had a great start at Oakland, but only one strikeout. I thought there were actually a lot of pitchers that were worth a look this weekend. Some of them are owned in 70% of leagues or so, but some of them, like Gausman and Velasquez, are widely available. What do you guys think about some of the names I just read?
Well, I do think they all have mixed league upside. I don't think there's any rush to pick up Velasquez or Gausman. And I found that there wasn't anyone I was on my mixed league rosters, Roto or head to head, that I thought was expendable enough to take the shot on them when they probably just sit on waivers anyway. Nola was a priority because he's getting all the attention right now. Cingrani, like I said, I want him where there's the relief pitcher eligibility comes in handy, because I do think there's upside there, even though I'm a lot less confident in him meeting it at this stage of his career. And then Garcia, I could see owning Garcia. I didn't really drop him where I had him. I was just stashing him on the DL.
Now, I wanted to talk about Hendricks quickly because, you know, he's been impressive. He's 68% owned, and again, 0.35 ERA in his last four starts. But the last four starts for Hendricks have come at the Mets, home against the Marlins, home against the White Sox, and at the Braves. Four of the worst lineups in baseball. So maybe that's something to keep in mind. Where did you guys land on Hendricks? I know Al didn't weigh in. Scott?
Yeah, well, and I second everything that Scott did say. And Hendricks, in terms of this whole group of pitchers, it's hard to pick a clear favorite. I mean, I think he and Jaime Garcia have pretty similar appeal. So, yeah, no, I think Hendricks, he doesn't need to be owned, but he definitely has mixed league value.
Do you guys want to win $5,000 tonight?
Sure.
Yeah.
Enter the MLB squeeze on FanDuel. First prize, $5,000. It's $2 to enter. So you can enter that one, or you can enter the our tournament, which is also $2. Doesn't have quite the prize, but less competition. Now we're giving away five free entries to today's MLB squeeze. And let's say five people who tweet me, at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R, a question that they would have liked Scott to ask Pedro Martinez. And I will pick five of my favorite questions.
I think it'd be more interesting if you said Carlos Martinez.
No, let's just try Pedro. That'd be easier. What question should he have asked Pedro Martinez? Five free entries to the MLB squeeze. Tweet me at Adam Azer, A-I-Z-E-R, and I will select five winners tonight. And we have a giveaway every single day here on our podcast. Added and dropped, do we have to talk more about who we added and dropped, or did we more or less cover it?
Pretty much covered it. I'm trying to think if there's anybody I did pick up that we haven't talked about.
Brian Johnson, I don't think we've mentioned him.
There you go. Starting this week for the Red Sox.
Yeah. I don't think he's too far behind Nola. His minor league numbers are awfully impressive in their own right, and he actually did get some strikeouts down there. I don't know that he has the stuff to back it up, because he kind of was one of those prospects who became a prospect mostly because the numbers were just blowing people away. But Red Sox pitcher who looks like he has a secure rotation spot, at least until he bombs. Yeah, I'm going to take a chance on that.
So if Eduardo Rodriguez has a bad start today at 5:05 p.m. Eastern at the Angels, are you ready to drop him for some of the guys we've talked about? Nola, Cingrani, Fires, et cetera. Eduardo Rodriguez.
No. No? No, he's been mostly very good.
Yeah, he's been frustrating for the last four starts, I think, something like that.
Well, and then before that, he was producing good results, but not really pitching with great control. So he's not beyond dropping, but just because of, you know, one bad start, that seems a little premature.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it didn't seem like one bad start. I'm going to look up the game log here.
There were two bad starts. There was June 14th, he gave up 9 earned runs, and June 25th, he gave up 6. And three starts since that second one, 4 earned runs and 17 in the third innings, 14 strikeouts.
Yeah, just the game logs are not great because some are low strikeouts. You're not going a lot of innings. I think that's kind of the big thing. But I see what your point. He's not been bad enough to really be droppable.
No.
Okay. Then we'll look at the most added list. We probably covered a lot of it. Kyle Schwarber, number one. Nola, two. Youngman, three. Kyle Gibson is four. He's a two-star pitcher. He's 78% owned. But not only is he a two-star pitcher, Al, he's a guy that you called a buy-low candidate about a week and a half ago, and a guy who has been pitching well, getting strikeouts. What do you think about Kyle Gibson?
I'm not sure I'd call him a buy-low candidate now because he has been on the most added list and gaining in popularity. So I think maybe he's getting just the due that he deserves. But the increased strikeouts are something that just continue for him. So I really do believe that he's turned a corner.
Brian Johnson right after Gibson. Who would you guys rather own, Johnson or Gibson?
I'd rather own Gibson.
I'd rather own Johnson because I do feel like the upside's higher.
Time to give hitters some love. David Peralta, 56% owned. Now, Ender Inciarte's back. Peralta sat against a lefty over the weekend, but he has been hitting really well.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts on 56% ownership for Peralta?
I can't really say that's too low because of the influence of Inciarte, and I think we can probably count on Peralta sitting against most left-handers, even though he hit pretty well against them while Inciarte was out. Just seems like Hale doesn't see Inciarte as a bench player. He doesn't see any of those four outfielders as a bench player. So he's going to keep mixing them up. And inconsistent at-bats, that's not mixed league material, really, usually.
Ender Inciarte himself, you could make a case for him to be on the most added list. I'm going to look up his ownership percentage.
You could. I feel like he'll probably be the one of the four to play the least.
And also the one who probably is least productive on a per-game basis.
That's true, too, yeah.
He is 45% owned. 9 steals for Inciarte in 66 games, so maybe more valuable in Roto. More on the most added list here. That was scrolling. We go to, who's next? Erasmo Ramirez. 51% owned. Do you like him better than Nola, Cingrani, Youngman, Fires, blah, 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 blah?
I like him better than all of them. And the fact that there is a quick math here, 27 percentage point gap between him and Kyle Gibson, to me says that Erasmo is very underowned.
You like him more than Fires?
Yeah, I do.
Here's my problem with Erasmo. Last,
I know what it is.
Gosh, last 12 starts.
I think I know
7 of them less than 6 innings.
You knew it, didn't you, Adam?
Yeah, it's the same problem I have with him. I think it's just the way Kevin Cash manages. He doesn't let his starters, except for the proven good ones, he doesn't let the Andreese's and the, the Carnes's of the world really go more than 6 innings all that often.
Yeah, and I guess I still hold out some hope that he'll eventually go deeper. I definitely want him around for the 2 start weeks. And so in the 1 start weeks, yeah, I might be stashing him a lot of those, but I don't want to risk losing him on waivers.
Okay, so that's Erasmo Ramirez. Certainly good on a per-inning basis.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Randall Grichuk is 50% owned. That does seem a little high to me, but he's hitting well. He's hit 2 home runs in 1 game over the weekend.
Who is that?
Randall Grichuk.
Oh, Grichuk.
I don't think that's high.
No?
My only concern with him is playing time.
Now that Holiday is back.
Yep.
Would you rather have Grichuk or Peralta?
Ooh. They're similar.
Yeah.
I think 5 outfielder leagues, you could make a case for either.
You can only have one.
I actually have a little more hope for Grichuk playing regularly because they could just make him their center fielder, and that would solve everything.
Yeah. I'll agree with all that. I think he even has a little bit more power than Peralta.
Some names we haven't covered. CJ Krohn, Robbie Ray, Mike Leake, Jim Johnson, John Jaso, Rougned Odor. Let's stop it at Jaso. Is it even a question, Schwarber over Jaso?
No, it is not.
I only bring it up just for long term, because maybe Jaso has more longevity.
No, he certainly does. But you know, Schwarber should be around for quite a while, and you know, when he goes back down, assuming he goes back down, you know, you worry about it then.
By the way, he started only 1 of 3 games over the weekend, but I think one was against a left-hander, and then the other one, John Lester was starting, and David Ross always catches John Lester. So I read that Schwarber is supposed to start 3 of the 4 games against the Reds. So it's not like they're afraid to catch him or anything.
I bet he's in your FanDuel lineup tonight, Scott.
He absolutely is. Pretty much across the board, yeah.
Yeah, he's in mine too. Alright. Odor, 63% owned. Let me tell you something, guys.
Tell me something.
I feel like I'm surprised he's only 63% owned.
I am too. Yeah.
And he's been so good that I wonder if I could trade. This is what I've been thinking in one of my leagues. If I could trade Jason Kipnis and get a great haul back. I mean, I'm obviously getting somebody great. And be comfortable with Rougned Odor being my starting second baseman for the rest of the year.
I love it.
Do you feel like he's gonna be productive rest of season, Rougned Odor, if he's not getting into fights with Hank Conger?
Yes. Yeah. Well, I don't know when they see the Astros again, but, yeah, no, I feel pretty confident that, Odor is going to be productive rest of season, and, that's a great way to make use of some surplus.
I don't know that I'm ready to go there yet. Okay. Like that specific scenario in a points, like our podcast league, let's say, where you're only starting one second baseman because there's no middle infield spot, and, lineups are so shallow that you're trying to get a stud at every position. And Odor may end up being that. I just don't know that you lose much by giving him another 3 or 4 weeks to really solidify that and then trading Kipnis then.
Well, I don't know if Kipnis is going to ever have as much value as he has now, even if he's really good rest of season. I mean,
right. There's that, and then if it's a specific type of situation where you have a need that's very hard to fill off waivers.
Yeah.
I would feel fine with Odor just taking over at second base and filling that need right now.
The guy right behind him on the most added list, I'm also a little surprised that Jung Ho Kang, just given his shortstop eligibility, is only 38% owned. Would you guys rather have Alcides Escobar, who's 86% owned, or Jung Ho Kang, who's 38% owned?
I think I'd actually rather have Escobar.
I would too.
Would you drop Angelton Simmons for Jung Ho Kang?
No.
I don't think so.
Really? So. Angelton Simmons I would drop for just about anyone in the world right now. He just is a completely unproductive player.
I think you'll feel the same way about Kang after a couple weeks.
You think so? How come?
He's been disappointed. There really hasn't been that much power there. There's really not been that much, you know, anything.
Yeah, you're right. He doesn't do all that much, but I feel like he'll at least score some runs. At least he's in a good lineup. Maybe drive in some runs just by, because other guys are on base. I don't know if Simmons can say that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, the point production, I know it's been a rough, looks like a really bad 4 week stretch here for Simmons in terms of fantasy points. But he's still top 10 shortstop in head to head points leagues to date. You know, I know that's partially front-loaded, and obviously it's a weak position, but that still tells you how you're not going to. It's not like there's somebody off waivers who's going to really solve that problem for you, and I don't think Kang is among them for the reasons Al said.
And you can always figure, if nothing else, that Simmons is hardly ever going to strike out.
Yeah.
Would you drop Brock Holt for Jung Ho Kang?
I think I would.
I definitely wouldn't.
Okay. So, got a lot left here, and it's pretty impossible to get through everything that happened over the weekend. I want to throw out a couple more hitters. Are you buying into Matt Duffy? 70% owned, 13 hits in his last 6 games, 2 doubles and a triple in that stretch. Matt Duffy.
I can't say I really am. You know, just it's still, to me, feels very early to buy into what he's done at the major league level. That's a little bit out of line with what he's done in the minors.
I don't think he's somebody who I would just ignore on waivers if I had a need at either of the positions he plays, which are some weak positions. I'd go for him over Kang, I feel like.
Yeah.
I don't think Duffy's eligible shortstop, but just if I needed a middle infielder.
And 2 more names that I thought about picking up this weekend, couldn't really find the roster space. Delino DeShields, 32% owned, and Jonathan Scope, who's hitting for a lot of power. 6 home runs this year, 9 hits in his last 5 games. He's 20% owned. Scope and DeShields.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we know who DeShields is at this point. He steals help, and he's going to play regularly. Scope is interesting because he showed power as a rookie last year, but hit only .209. The plate discipline was terrible. Clearly, he's not a guy who's going to walk a lot, but he is, showing even more power now as a sophomore. He's only 23 years old. He was legitimately considered a high-end prospect coming up through the minors. And I think he's one of those players who we kind of write off early in his career because he doesn't set the world on fire right away. But eventually, as he approaches his mid-20s here, we start to see what the hype was all about with him. And I'm not ready to say that after only, what, like 25 at-bats since he came off the DL. But I would be tempted to pick him up if I needed a middle infielder, and particularly if I needed a middle infielder and was short on power.
Now, didn't we start to go, and I say we, I mean we, the fantasy baseball community, start to go gaga over Jimmy Paredes after about the same amount of time?
Well, gaga might be a little strong.
I don't know. He was a hot pickup for.
Well, I did,
and I don't know that we're going gaga over Scope.
No, either, but that's. I don't think we are, and that's kind of my point. Is that if Paredes got a lot of attention for a very good and very unexpected start, for all the things that you just said, Scott, that you know Scope, you know, did come up as the more heralded prospect. That even last year, even though he did very little else, he showed really good power.
Mm-hmm.
I think he deserves at least as much attention in fantasy as Paredes was given when he started off so hot.
Because
they're both guys with questionable plate discipline.
Would you drop Paredes for Scope?
I would.
I think so, yeah.
I would.
Yeah, I mean, Paredes, I'm ready to move on from him.
All right, next section. Buyer beware. Two guys who may have made their last starts for their teams. Cole Hamels and Johnny Cueto, and the starts were not good. And Hamels has a 3.91 ERA.
All of a sudden.
Yeah.
Just because the last two starts were so bad, it was low threes before those two.
But it's 5 earned runs or more in 4 of his last 7 starts. Highest whip since 2009, highest walk rate since his rookie season 2006. One thing to say about Hamels, August and September are the two best months of his career. He is a strong finisher. But are you guys concerned about Cole Hamels, who threw up a dud against the Marlins?
I am a little bit. There was a report couple weeks ago, and unfortunately I don't remember the source or even who was making the claim, but that he's struggling because of the trade rumors.
Yeah, it could be.
Yeah, I've seen that a couple of times.
And, you know, players and people in management say a lot of things that you can't always trust. But it's, you know, it's so uncharacteristic that, you know, I'm willing to give it a little bit of credence, but, you know, the part of me that doesn't give that credence is worried that maybe there is something wrong.
Would you, if you were an MLB franchise or a fantasy baseball franchise, buy low on Cole Hamels?
Well, yeah. I mean, either scenario, probably, I would.
Yeah. Johnny Cueto. Bad start against Cleveland. 4 innings, 2 runs, 6 walks. Last start was not a good one. Only 2 strikeouts and 5 innings, give up 7 hits and 3 runs at the Marlins. And the 2 starts before that were just brilliant. But he threw 111 pitches and 122 pitches in those 2 starts. Cueto has thrown 111 pitches or more in 4 of 5 starts before these last 2 bad ones. And he's thrown over 120 pitches 3 times this season. I must say, Brian Price, for a guy with, hit an injury history like Johnny Cueto's, I think you might be overworking him just a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, the fact that he's had 2 separate stints where he was sidelined by an elbow injury this year, I am surprised they're not being more careful with him, unless they're trying to showcase him for a trade and they think somehow that's going to help. He was looking good before these last 2 starts, but I'm more concerned about Hamels because there's that clear concern with the elbow.
You mean you're more concerned about Cueto?
Yeah, than Hamels.
Right. Yeah, I think it's legit. I don't think you're telling people to get rid of him or anything, but I don't think I would trade for Johnny Cueto.
You know, I would trade Cueto probably straight up for Hamels.
Al?
Yeah, I think I'm a little more concerned about Hamels, but even if you take the pitch count stuff out of the equation, I'm just concerned about Cueto because of the recent injury history.
Sure. 2 prospect names for you that I had read about recently. Michael Conforto for the Mets and Stephen Piscotty for St. Louis, as they need a first baseman and they're trying him out at first. Do these guys interest you at all? Conforto for the Mets, Piscotty for the Cardinals.
I don't see either having a whole lot of current season value. I mean, I like them both longer term.
Especially Conforto.
Yeah.
Conforto's, I'm pretty confident saying he's going to be a big deal eventually, but he was just drafted last year and you don't see hitters move that fast normally. Piscotty, a little older. The power hasn't been there consistently in the minors, though I feel like he's been very good recently. I agree, though, that if he got called up, I wouldn't be rushing to add him. I don't think he's quite that caliber of prospect.
If you guys were general managers, what would you think of this trade? The Mets trade Matt Harvey for George Springer.
Straight up,
yeah.
You say?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I have to say, I like that. I like it just in a vacuum. I think that's pretty good value. And for the Mets in particular, with the pitching surplus and needing a lot of offensive help, I think that's a smart trade.
Hmm. Yeah, I think what makes it balanced is the service time that Harvey has more than, and is closer to free agency than Springer.
Yeah, for the Mets, that's more relevant than for some other teams.
I don't know, though. I don't think I'd feel good about it as a Mets fan. I know Mets fans are just so tired of pitching because that's somehow a bad thing, having a lot of pitching.
I think they love their pitchers. I just think it makes sense for them to trade for hitting.
I just don't know. Like, the kind of hitter Springer is, I don't think he would cease the frustrations of those offense, of that offense. Because he would be very hot and cold, low batting average overall, probably.
Like, well, they need more than Springer. You know, they would have to make another deal on top of that.
Well, if trading Harvey isn't enough to fix the problem, then, like, I feel like Harvey, I know there's been some struggles coming back in his first year from Tommy John surgery, but he's already established as, like, this top of the line pitcher. Well, Springer's not quite there as an outfielder, and so I don't know that you're guaranteeing your team anything by making that trade. It does seem like a fairly even trade, but I don't think I'd like it as a Mets fan.
I'm going to ask you just some questions to finish off the podcast. Dallas Keuchel, can he strike out 8 batters per 9 rest of season?
I think he can.
Yeah.
He's pretty good. Clayton Kershaw, is he the clear number one starting pitcher in fantasy rest of season?
I don't think it's clear, but I'm going to move him back ahead of Scherzer and say that I do think he will be.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. He should be number one, but there's a lot of very close competition.
Hisashi Iwakuma, should he be close to 100% owned?
No. I don't think so.
No. I think he probably should be added. I like him more than all the pitchers we talked about. If that group fires Nola, and back-to-back good starts,
are you concerned?
Well, okay, so you're saying close to 100% owned is because he's at 84 now, right?
Yes.
So I mean, is that what you're considering? Because to me, close to 100 is like 90 plus.
Yeah, 90 plus.
Right.
90 plus.
Yeah, no, I think his percentage is good where it is.
I'd add him if he was available in any of my leagues.
Are you concerned about any of the following pitchers: Sonny Gray, Madison Bumgarner, Colin McHugh? Well. Different class. Are you concerned about Sonny Gray, Madison Bumgarner, or Michael Pineda?
No, none of them. I'm not sure what the reason for concern would be.
They haven't been as good recently.
Kind of heard an interesting thing about Pineda. Well, read it, I guess. Remember he had the 16 strikeout game, and then they skipped him in the rotation, and then he was terrible. Well,
Pineda?
This last start, it wasn't awful. Gave up 2 home runs to Robinson Cano, but he only struck out 2 Mariners in 6 innings. He doesn't seem to work well when they skip him. He likes to throw a lot. So I don't know that you'll deal with that problem again this season. But the 2 times that he's had an extended break when they skipped him and then All-Star break, not very sharp. So I think that could explain the bad start over the week, the disappointing start over the weekend. And then Bumgarner just hasn't been pitching a lot. Like, 3 straight starts of less than 6 innings, and they were very cautious with him on Sunday, but no concerns?
Pineda, I feel like, is still in a different class from those other two.
Yeah, totally.
Kind of like you were saying with McHugh.
Yeah.
So I don't know that you can have the same expectations for them, but Bumgarner, Gray was probably due for some regression. Bumgarner, I'm not worried about at all.
Then I'm going to go to Danny Duffy, 25% owned.
On the surface, looks like he's maybe even breaking out. I mean, he's had really good results. But I'm still convinced he's just the left-handed Chris Young, which, you know, for coming from me is not a bad thing.
Right.
But, and he probably should be owned in more than 25%. But I'm not definitely not rushing out to pick him up in standard mixed leagues. And yeah. If I had him, he'd definitely be a pitch and ditch guy.
As good as he's been his last two starts, one run in 14 innings, four walks to four strikeouts in those 14 innings, four strikeouts.
Yeah.
So I'm not really convinced he's improved.
All right, that's Danny Duffy. One more guy to maybe put on your radar, because we've seen Chris Tillman in 2014, most recently, and then I think 2012, just be awesome after the All-Star break. And he threw eight scoreless innings, one hit, one walk, eight strikeouts at Detroit. 39% owned for Chris Tillman. Is he on your radar as a second-half guy?
Not.
He should be. Well, I'm sorry. Yeah, Scott.
Well, we kind of both... We're waiting for the other to talk, and then we finally jumped in at the same time. That's what happened there. I mean, he's not for me. You know, another start or two like this, and I'll quickly change that tune. But he's been so bad most of the year that I feel like there's not a lot of competition for him right now. So I'm just going to kind of wait it out.
What makes me a little bit more optimistic on Tillman, and it makes me say that he hasn't been on my radar, but he probably should be. Heath has pointed out to me a couple of times during the season that his stats against teams that are not the Blue Jays are actually pretty good.
I don't think that's true anymore, though.
No, it was true as of a week and a half or 2 weeks ago.
Really?
Yeah.
Because that was a big thing.
I think it had gotten even more true.
Really?
Let's see. He's had four starts against the Blue Jays, all of them terrible.
Yeah.
He had a bad start against the Yankees, although not as bad as any of the four Blue Jay starts. And he had a bad start against the Red Sox, though again, not as bad as any of the four Blue Jay starts. Oh, and he had a bad start against the Rays. So, it's not like he's only been bad against the Blue Jays, but...
But the overall body of work, that's three starts that you say that are bad out of what? I'm guessing about 10?
Three starts. Okay, so there was the four Blue Jay starts, three bad starts otherwise. So, you know, taking the four Blue Jay starts out, that leaves him with 14. So 11 of the 14 non-Blue Jay starts were, if not quality, just very close to that. Maybe a little short on innings a couple times. And actually, his four most recent starts, one was not so great. But a 140 ERA, 24 strikeouts and 25 and two-thirds innings, and that's last four starts. So it's not like this start against the Tigers over the weekend was as isolated as it feels to me.
All right. I got to speed us along. I'm sorry. That will conclude our Chris Tillman discussion. Let me read some emails here. And start with Edmund Ned Almond from Sugar City, Idaho?
Yes. Isn't that your ID?
I didn't know what ID was. I was like, Indiana? No, Idaho. Rest of season points league. I have an open spot on my bench. Who should I add? Peralta, Maurer, Fowler, Markakis, or Belt?
I would add Belt.
I would add Fowler.
Ned Kelly, another Ned from the Emerald City. Rest of season, where is the Emerald City?
This is a Ned-heavy podcast.
Y'all, we kind of primed it on Friday.
Yeah, you missed it, Scott.
That's a Ned talk.
We had a Ned thing going on.
Oh.
Where's the Emerald City?
Seattle, I believe.
Oh, okay. Rest of season points league starter to add. Kyle Gibson, Mike Leake, Cologne, Kohler, Quintana, Fires.
Quintana.
Yes, yeah. Quintana.
Followed by who? He wants two.
Gibson.
I'll take Fires over Gibson for upside purposes. But Quintana's the clear standout here. He should be owned already.
This is from Reggie. Top of the morning to you, head-to-head points league. Aaron Nola is on my inactive roster. The back of my active roster is Hutchison, Corbin, Moore, and Heaney. Would you drop any of them to activate Nola for the rest of the season? Hutchison, Corbin, Moore, and Heaney.
Hutchison.
Yeah, I don't think there's any reason to bother with Hutchison. I don't know exactly like, what's the downside to activating a guy? Maybe there's some upside to keeping him inactive for even while he's up. But yeah, I can't say with 100% certainty Nola's going to be a guy you're going to slot in your starting lineup right away. So if you can, if it helps in some way to wait and see, I would wait and see.
Next email's from Josh. Dear Greg, Tom, and John.
Those Braves, are Braves
three pitchers that Scott and Al did not talk to at the airport.
Nope.
Rank these guys rest of season. Corbin, Beachy, Gausman, Nola, Santana.
I'm going to have to go in the vacuum here because there's clearly an upside versus steadiness thing here when you're talking about guys like Nola and Gausman versus Santana.
Yeah.
But in the vacuum, I think I'm going Santana tops, then let's see. Yeah, gosh. Gausman, Corbin, Nola, Beachy.
I'll go Nola, Santana, Corbin, Gausman, Beachy.
Okay.
So I guess we kind of flip Gausman and Nola there.
Next up, we have Kyle. Hello, Mr. Bonds, Mr. McGuire, Mr. Sosa.
He misspelled McGuire.
Yeah, it is, it's Mac.
How rude.
I was wondering what you thought about the strategy of, you know what? I'm going to put a star next to this. This will be an email tomorrow when we have more time. So last one's Josh and
it's
Buffalo.
Not the first time there's an asterisk next to those guys, you know.
Nice, Al. This is from Josh and Buffalo. Dear Slash, Duffy, and Izzy, which outfielder of this group would you least like to have rest of season in a points league? Three outfielders. So who's the most droppable, I guess? Peralta, Brandon Moss, Torrey Hunter, or Billy Hamilton?
I'll go Torrey Hunter here. Pretty close among the first three, though.
Yeah, Hamilton's the only one you absolutely don't drop. I'd probably drop Peralta over Hunter, but either way is fine with me.
So it's time for FanDuel. And remember the giveaway today. Tweet me at Adam Azer, and remember to join our league, CBS Pod. FanDuel.com/CBS Pod. Okay, you've got Harvey, you got Gio, you got Heaney. I don't think you can really make a case for any other pitcher today, but I'll let you guys try if you'd like.
No, that's okay.
I do have a tournament lineup with Moore and Beachy just in case they go all pre-Cy Young form on us tonight, but
I'm not
counting on it. I'm not.
You meant Tommy John, right?
What did I say?
Cy Young.
Yeah, I meant Tommy John.
The surgery that makes you great.
Pitcher's known for different things. Yeah.
All right, so then do you have a personal favorite? Heaney?
Heaney's my favorite, and it's... I would... If Harvey had been Harvey in his last few starts, I would definitely go Harvey. But I don't feel like... You're paying this... Surefire ace price tag for a guy who hasn't been a surefire ace. He was fine last time out, 9 strikeouts in 7 innings, but the strikeouts haven't been there consistently, and really nothing has. So, even if it's a situation where everybody in the world starts Harvey, I think there's a good chance Heaney's just better, and obviously you get the better hitters in your lineup as well.
I completely agree there. I was a little surprised at first, actually, when you said Heaney, but, you know, when you break it down what the options are and what the prices are, Heaney would be my top guy as well.
Red Sox are bad against lefties too, which, yeah, I mean, Ortiz, I'm sure, is a big part of that, but.
Plus, you're gonna get a doubleheader lineup, so you might get Pedroia sitting or something like that.
That's true. Good point.
Now, there's no reason not to like any of those top three. I don't know how you guys feel about Gio, but he's been pitching well. His last start against the Mets was excellent. I like the fact the Mets can't hit lefties. The Mets are even worse than the Red Sox against lefties. And that 18 innings thing, it does mean something to me.
Now, I don't love Gio today because I feel like he's, I mean, 9,400, he's only a little behind Harvey in terms of price, so I don't think you're saving money there. And he's going head to head against Harvey. I don't think that's a slam dunk win.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, Harvey has been so good against the Nationals, so in his career, I mean, he's just ridiculous. So maybe Gio doesn't get the win. So that's a good point. I might drop down to Heaney. If I drop down to Heaney, I might be able to get another Colorado Rocky in my lineup. Hard to see them not having a big day against Nick Martinez at home. But there are so many good stacks. Seattle lefties against Alfredo Simon. Although Kyle Seager does not have good numbers in Comerica. 31 at-bats in his last three seasons before this year and no extra base hits. But Cano's fairly, you know, affordable. Detroit against Jay Happ. I mean, it's just like there are so many good stacks. Which did you target today?
If I was doing a stack, and I did actually set one with Heaney, though it's not my primary lineup, the one I'm playing in cash games, but one tournament lineup, I have a Reds stack actually going against Clayton Richard, because I feel like they're the right combination of hot, and the prices work out right. Eugenio Suarez at 2,600 is pretty much the shortstop I'm starting across the board. He doubled and homered yesterday. Todd Frazier's only 3,500. That's a lot lower than we're used to seeing him. Marlon Byrd's great against lefties, 2,700. And Joey Votto, he bats left-handed, but the splits aren't so bad, and he's 3,500 himself. So those are pretty good prices, especially when you're talking Frazier and Votto for the caliber of player you're getting there.
Marlon Byrd, 2,700.
I did mention it.
I'm sorry. I heard all the other ones. I didn't hear that one. All right, Al, anybody that you want to pick on here? Some of the options today. I don't know that I want to pick on Steven Wright because he's a knuckleballer. He's not that bad. But Beachy, Whistler, Simon and Happ, Clayton Richard, as Scott mentioned, Michael Lorenzen himself going against the Cubs. Schwarber is very cheap today. Yordano Ventura against the Pirates. Nick Martinez versus Chris Russell at Colorado. David Phelps is at Arizona. Tim Hudson, Ian Kennedy could be a crappy one. In San Diego.
Yeah, but the one you skipped over is the one after Scott's stack that I like the best, which is Rangers against Russin. And the Rangers
at Colorado.
At Colorado.
Yeah.
I didn't skip it.
Well, yeah, because you said Martinez, the Rockies versus Martinez.
I thought I said both, but okay.
But yeah, I actually like the other side a little better.
The only issue with that, and I looked at it, so the Rangers lineup is so lefty heavy, and that's what Russin is. Prince Fielder at 4,400, I think, is okay because the splits are fine. But Odor, the splits are no good. They're not good.
Finding the fourth member of the stack is tough. But I would definitely go with Prince, DeLeon DeShields Jr., not the one traded for Pedro Martinez, and Robinson Chirinos, who I start pretty regularly when he faces lefties. I like those three.
You like Chirinos at 3,000 over Schwarber at 26?
Well, no. I'd have to say no.
Yeah.
I can't really say I would start Chirinos over him.
The Cubs are going against Lorenzen, whose overall numbers don't look so bad, but he doesn't pitch deep into games, and he's terrible against lefties. So that's Schwarber, and even though I mentioned Votto was a pretty good start today, Anthony Rizzo is only 3,900. He's an even better start. So that's another, at least those two Cubs, I'm looking to get them in.
And I like Matt Kemp today.
Yeah.
3,400 facing Tim Hudson, who has very good numbers against, and he's hitting very well.
He is.
I don't love my team, and I think I'm going to go with Heaney. Yeah, I think you guys have convinced me. I'm going to get Gio out of there, get Mr. Heaney in there. And now I've got $2,500 more dollars. Because how do you feel about Howie Kendrick today at Atlanta facing Brandon Beachy?
I like him.
Yeah.
$2,900, pretty cheap.
He's usually a very good cash play. So consistent.
Mm-hmm.
All right, but now I can upgrade from Belt to Goldschmidt.
Oh, you want Goldschmidt in there?
Well, I took out Gio, I put in Heaney, and I took out Brandon Belt, and I'm going to go with... Would you go Goldschmidt or Fielder? I can afford both.
I wasn't loving Goldschmidt today. Who are they facing?
Phelps.
Oh, Phelps. I thought it was Latos.
I think Latos is tomorrow.
Oh, well, that might change things for me. And they pulled the old changeup on me.
Yeah, I'm going to go Goldschmidt. Why not?
And right. I thought it was Taijuan Walker, and it's Jay Happ. So.
Andrew Heaney for everyone. Now we have no chance of winning the tournament. that's going to do it for us today. Thank you all. Talk to you tomorrow. Scott, great to have you back.
Good to be back.
Al, it's like you never left.
Still here.
Yeah. I'm Adam Azer for Al Melchior and Scott White. and Fantasy Baseball Today returns tomorrow.